Hello, I'm Sandy Jolly, an interventional cardiologist and associate professor at McMaster University in Canada. I'm joined by Eva Prescott, a professor of cardiology at the University of Copenhagen in Denmark, and it's our pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
And I'm also joined by Professor Chris Granger, who I know well. He's a professor of medicine at Duke University. Welcome and thank you for joining us today. We're at the 2017 European Congress of Cardiology in Barcelona, and there's really been a lot of important information. And we're going to first talk about lipids and prevention. You may say an interventional cardiologist talking about prevention, well, it's important. So I think the first trial that is of interest is Fourier, and particularly this low LDL analysis. Fourier, we all know, was a large PCSK9 inhibitor trial that showed a benefit for clinical outcomes. Eva, why don't you tell us about low LDL analysis?
Well, I think we've all been worried with, even when we started with the statins, we were worried that it might be dangerous to lower our LDL levels. And now we feel comfortable with the statins, but now we're going to new levels of LDL. So, of course, we feel, is this physiological? Are we going to levels that are non-physiological? And are there side effects to that? Mm-hmm. But we were very reassured by the data from Fourier.
Chris, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I think it's both exciting that seems like no matter how low the LDL went, there seemed to be additional benefit in this observational analysis, but from a randomized data set. But it also creates a challenge because, especially with the cost of PCSK9 inhibitors, it'd be nice to know, like, who gets the greatest benefit? And, is it the people who have very high LDL levels that will still have residual LDL levels, or does everybody benefit from PCSK9 inhibitor who has risk of cardiovascular events? And it looks to me like maybe everybody benefits, and then that's going to create a challenge for us. Who should we use these drugs in? Should it be patients who have high LDL? Should it be patients who can afford them? Of course, that's important. Cost effectiveness is going to be really important to sort out. Or should it be patients who have high vascular risk? And that may be the most important factor when we're making these decisions.
Yeah, I think that's important. I mean, the one caveat is this was a non-randomized analysis, right? They looked at whether you were in PCSK9 or whether you were on placebo. They looked at your LDL level in one of five groups and looked at your outcomes. And there appeared if your LDL is less than 0.5 or 20, very, very low levels, you had about somewhere in the range of 20 to 25% reduction in events compared to higher LDL. So one question I have for you both is, should the guidelines change? Should the threshold that we target for patients with established vascular disease, should the target actually be lower? And then if so, what is the target?
I think we have to remember that although we are very impressed with PCSK9 inhibitors, the absolute risk reduction wasn't all that great, and there's no effect on mortality. And combined with the costs, now, European and U.S. Funding of healthcare is different, but combined with the costs, I would still say that we have recommendations now in the new STEMI ESC guidelines, in which we say that if your LDL level is still above 1.8 or 70, and you're estimated to be still at high risk, then we give it a 2B recommendation to either give ezetimibe or give PCSK9 inhibitors, and maybe an anacetrapib is going to be added to that at some point. So, I mean, the costs are really prohibitive, and together with the really relatively small risk reductions.
Yeah,
so,
and that
brings us back to your point, which should we look at those that are really at high absolute risk?
I think you almost need all three of those right now, right? High risk, have coverage and have high LDL, but we'll also get more data with Odyssey and other trials before long that's going to really be helpful to see if is there a larger benefit with longer treatment. The American guidelines, as you know, the U.S. guidelines actually de-emphasize a target and just say if you have vascular disease or high risk, you need to be on a high-intensity statin. But for somebody like familial hypercholesterolemia there, I think we all agree that using these drugs is something which we should be doing if we can afford them.
Yeah. But with PCSK9 inhibitors, I would suspect that you have to go back to targets because there will be non-responders and with such a costly...
Well, I think that's right, and so this is going to create we're going to need to, I think you're right, I think we're going to need to go back to some degree of target, and, you know, I mean, it's amazing, even the LDLs that were less than 10 milligrams per deciliter, in Fourier seem to be associated with the lowest risk.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. For me, as a clinician, you have these patients who come back, you know, 3 months, 6 months after an MI, and they're on, you know, let's say a high-dose statin, and they want to come down to a lower dose. And you ask them why, and, you know, maybe that they have a nebulous that a lower dose is going to be easier on them. The interesting thing is going to come is, let's go 10 years from now, 20 years from now, when we have agents that are perhaps oral, that are less expensive, that target the PCSK9 pathway, and now we can very easily achieve LDLs that are barely detectable, you know. And the question is, will we change our targets? Will everybody who has a high vascular risk be on this drug? So, but obviously, I think that's not ready for prime time at this perspective. So let's move on to one of the most talked about studies, PURE. And particularly, it goes back to what your mother used to tell you, what to eat, what not to eat. And Eva, do you want to just talk about the results just generally?
Well, they looked at total fat and saturated fat and the other unsaturated fats. And they also looked at carbohydrates and actually also at protein, and found that carbohydrate intake was associated with higher all-cause mortality, and the saturated fat was associated with a lower all-cause mortality, but wasn't associated with cardiac outcomes, although there was a reduced incidence of stroke. Mm-hmm. And of course, that is the surprising finding, and that's why the authors are challenging current guidelines, both with respect to the total fat intake and also with the saturated fat.
So Chris, are you going to change your diet?
So my interpretation of PURE, I think it's really interesting, and it's provocative, and I think it appropriately challenges, do we really know, based on high level of evidence, based on randomized evidence, what's the best diet to prevent cardiovascular disease? And I think the answer is no. I mean, the data on the Mediterranean diet is our best randomized data, showing that olive oil and nuts, tree nuts and fish, and seems to be important combined with exercise and avoiding smoking. But I think we there's still some uncertainty about what the best diet is. I think the idea of limiting total fat and having more carbohydrates is probably wrong. I think we agree with that. There's no good evidence for that. But I think we need more information about what's the very best diet to prevent cardiovascular disease.
Yeah, and the question is whether we're going to get that from observational studies, because there's so many things. You can't change one thing in your diet without changing another. And can you adjust your way out of that? That's very difficult to see. And also in such a, in a study like this where the dietary patterns are so different, the as they stress in the paper, that in some places, perhaps, I mean, all our evidence until now has been in Western populations, and so it's hugely relevant to get some more information from non-Western populations. And as they stress in the paper, that they may all have this, not all have the same basic nourishment that we have, so that might also interact with these results. But I think it's... I think it's important also that now that we're coming, we seem to be coming out with a very simple message about carbohydrates. We say that all that you should avoid carbohydrates, but all carbohydrates are not the same. I mean, there's some that are easily digested, or and others that are not. So we may be sort of back to it, giving a too simplistic message, like we've done with the fats, perhaps, and now we're doing the same with the carbohydrates. I think we should be careful with that.
It's interesting because I've chatted with Salim and asked his perspective, and he said, you know, right now one of the major challenges that's happening is the highly processed refined carbohydrates that is very easy to eat and is being propagated, and that's what his concern is. And it's obviously very different carbohydrate than we would have had 20 or 30 years ago. Everything is prepackaged now. So I think that is certainly, if you have the choice between a prepackaged, you know, bag of chips or fruit and vegetables, this would tell us that you probably better take the fruit and vegetables. Now, the fruit and vegetables didn't seem a surprise to me. So there was a reduction in mortality if with higher fruit intake, with raw vegetables, less with cooked vegetables, and not so much with legumes. But to me, that would seem like what my mother told me years ago. And was that a surprise to either of you, that there was a benefit from fruit and vegetables?
Well, the way I understood it is that the point they were making was that you don't need to eat as much as we've been recommending. And also, as far as I could see, they found the association with all-cause mortality, but not with cardiovascular disease outcomes. But what I understood was that we can ease up a bit on recommending on the portions of fruit and vegetables that we're recommending.
Yeah. They saw a benefit from 3 to 4 portions per day. So that's certainly more modest. And I think the interesting thing is we're seeing effects on overall all-cause mortality and not such as much of an effect on cardiovascular outcomes. And I think that's important because, you know, cardiovascular outcomes are improving. We certainly have better therapies. Other forms of mortality are increasing relative to cardiovascular, such as cancer and so on.
Could I make another point about this, the interpretation of PURE? Because we're also saying that you should move away from diet recommendations, saying that you should not eat too much fat. But we haven't actually been recommending, at least not in cardiovascular guidelines in Europe, that you should reduce your total fat. In fact, when you talk about the Mediterranean, the PREDIMED study, one of the arms that was beneficial was actually adding spoonfuls of olive oil and also on nuts, and you've got lots of fats in. Not. So we're not really afraid of fat, and that's a sort of a, I think, misinterpretation of our guidelines. A bit unfair.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's probably been common wisdom for many years, and I think while the guidelines are changing, common wisdom perhaps hasn't been changing as much. The next study we're going to talk about is REVEAL. So, do either of you have thoughts about REVEAL?
REVEAL is a fantastic study because we've been so disappointed with CETP inhibition. We've had these trials that trocetrapib which had bad side effects and will actually increase mortality, and the other CETP inhibitors that haven't had any effect. And now we see that there is an effect, and the effect is seems to fit with what you would expect from LDL lowering. Well, you saw a great HDL increase and moderate LDL lowering, but the effect on cardiovascular outcomes were what you would expect from the LDL lowering. So whether it's the LDL lowering or the increase in HDL, I suppose we don't know at present, but maybe when they do more analysis, we might get a hint about that.
So I'd just also comment that it was a big study, right, 30,000 patients, and it took a long time before the curves began to separate this modest 9% relative risk reduction. And in distinction to the Accelerate trial, which studied evacetrapib, another CETP inhibitor, where there was even a greater increase in HDL and reduction in LDL, but for a shorter duration, there was no effect in that study. But I think I agree with your interpretation. The effect is really quite modest. There's some challenges with anacetrapib. It has a fat depot effect, so it stays for a long time in the body. And the modest effect, I think, makes us think that it may not be something that's going to be important to use in clinical medicine.
Well, the effects are similar to ezetimibe. Actually, a little greater, I think.
Quite similar.
I've had 7%, yeah. Of course.
And I think that's a good point. Ezetimibe is used clinically in a minority of patients that don't reach target. And really, we're trying to avoid using PCSK9 inhibitors because of their cost. The interesting thing is that this was a surprise for me because all the CETP inhibitors have been a failure. And I think you're absolutely right that the curve separated beyond a year. And it was, you know, a 9% reduction in outcomes is modest. And, you know, one of the interesting things is it prevented new onset diabetes, which is interesting. But it raised blood pressure a little bit.
Yeah. And also had some effects on renal function.
Yes.
Yeah. Small, but...
Yeah. So that, I think, I don't see this as a major breakthrough. The question is, where would this be in the armamentarium? To summarize, you know, there have been some really important trials that have come out in terms of prevention. We've certainly had a very important, perhaps guidelines will change around LDL. PURE was very interesting in terms of dietary, and I think we really need future randomized trials looking at specific dietary recommendations, and I would hope to see that. And I think we now have another lipid-lowering agent in the armamentarium. Thank you for joining us.